This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Accountability. Fire and accountability. I thought it was the biggest travesty in sports that Eric Bieniemy did not get a head coaching job. Nobody with his resume never got a chance to be a head coach. And I'm glad he's back in the NFL, but the accountability and the fire that he'll bring to that sideline and to those offensive meetings is desperately needed in the NFL, and I'm sure you guys will be better for it.
This hour brought to you by Cars for Kids.
It is, as we broadcast live through the Hyundai Score Studios, because we are live from Wings and Rings on the south side, 3434 South Halstead. Open 7 days a week. The crowd is starting to filter in at a first pitch this afternoon. It is the Southside's premier sports restaurant experience. Come by, enjoy an ice-cold Yingling before the game, brought to you by Yingling. Yingling, America's oldest brewery. There is free shuttle service to all the White Sox home games with proof of purchase, free parking in the back. And every day on Wednesdays at Wings and Rings, you can get $5 premium drinks all day. Good stuff. So Eric Bieniemy, now the running backs coach with the Chicago Bears. And Bieniemy was on their official podcast that came out. We all want to hear his thoughts on just not only what he sees in this Bears team, but get to know him more since he was such a popular name for so many years. So let's listen in on how he describes his style of coaching.
It's all about getting to know the people that you're working with. But on top of that, developing the relationships, and finding out their limits and how to push them and get the very, very best out of them. And like I always tell young men when I'm coaching them, I said, listen, I'm going to coach you hard. I also coach fair. I'm going to be your biggest advocate when you do it the right way. But it ain't personal.
Yeah.
I'm coaching that behavior that you put on tape, because that behavior, is at some point in time, if it's not done the right way, we can impact a game. We can also cause somebody an injury or whatever. So we want to make sure that we're doing things fundamentally, all right, the right way, but also making sure that we understand that accountability goes a long way in this industry. And if we can be accountable, now we got a chance to grow. Now we have a chance to become a winning organization.
I got to ask you what your definition of hard coaching is. Because some players like it, yeah. Some don't. Some want it, some deal with it. Yeah. I mean, it's all different across the rainbow.
And it's basically challenging your guys more than anything, just to get the very best out of them. And more than anything, just demanding a certain type of ethic. It's going to be a code in how we handle ourselves. You know, I'm from the old school. I always tell them, If you don't work, you don't eat. All right. And if we're not eating, we're not giving ourselves a chance to be the best that we can be. So it's important that we understand there's going to be an imaginary sign outside that door every single day that says hiring all applicants. Because if we're applying ourselves, that means we're not wasting any opportunities. We have to learn how to make sure that we're not taking anything for granted. And if we're not taking anything for granted, we're doing the very most of it because now we're learning to make second effort a habit. And if we're playing with that second effort, now we're giving ourselves a chance not only to be the best running back group, but we're giving ourselves a chance to be the best team. Because if we put that infectious behavior on tape, players are going to want to follow that.
So I appreciate him discussing his style, because if you hear other players talk about him, it's a little different. He spent 1 year with Washington, then spends a year at UCLA. I remember when it was discussed, that exit from UCLA prior to coming to the Bears, it was said this was mutually agreed upon, that this was something that was discussed. And the way they had to phrase it was in a way where people, I think, in response to saying, was he let go or was it something more abrupt? But either way, you knew something was off when you saw the language. Now, there are guys who say things like, he's a tough love coach. You know, Adrian Peterson has talked about him being tough, but also having that love part. We've heard other criticisms of him when it comes to how that manifests in his coaching style. When you hear, what do you hear?
I hear an old school coach talking old school values as far as how people need to be coached up, held accountable. And I think any player that has a problem with what he described, they have a problem, because that's how coaching goes. Now, I will say this. He said he coaches fair, right? Well, that's subjective, because you're the coach. Someone is also being coached, and they can also determine whether they think what you do is fair or not. I'm sure Matt Eberflus thinks he coaches fair, right? What coach doesn't think they coach fair?
Right.
And so are you getting the feedback from your players? Because every player is different in how they receive coaching. And are you taking the feedback that you get from your players under advisement and adopting different methods with different people? It's not unlike managing people in other jobs, other sectors. Different people can be treated differently, but it can still be fair because everyone isn't equal when you're talking about who's being coached, who's being managed, however you want to put it. And so for Eric Bieniemy, what he described is great. Now, if he ruffled feathers because of the way he coaches, because some guys, you know, we live in this more than ever, guys are coming up and being coddled on the way to greatness. You know, you can get to the NFL and be challenged and push yourself, but not want to take coaching from certain guys or in a certain manner.
You can transfer.
Yeah.
You don't have to work with that head coach that you thought you were going to be with, which I think is more than fair. I like that part of it.
No, find what works for you. But also, if you're only coaching one way, that can rub some people the wrong way.
It can. And when you consider the quotes from Adrian Peterson where he says, you never felt like it was just him trying to call you out or embarrass you or anything like that. Sure, it's Adrian Peterson, you know, so I think about that part of it too. He was stern, but I think it was to a point where it was all out of love. And it's a difference because you have some coaches that it's stern and just blank. And when I say blank, there's a euphemism for jerks there. You know what I'm trying to say. But Coach EB, he was never telling you anything wrong. And when you look back, he was right. I should have did this better. I should have finished better. Or, you know, that was a poor read. We always had a respect for him, too, because he played. And we know all the success he had at Colorado. So, I mean,
Peterson is of a certain age where he knows, but do the other guys know? Guys now at UCLA and these other places?
I would qualify Peterson as an old school person like that when it comes to how he came up and how he talks about coming up and then the news that he's made. Like that's a little more of an old school mentality.
The court cases he's been a part of.
Right, exactly. But it's somebody who spoke on this, so consider the source and consider that quote. There's also the part of this where he called him out. Like, he called out DeAndre Swift, which I thought was pretty interesting. Now, valid to note here that Swift averaged a career low in yards per carry at 3.8 this past season.
But how much of that was the blocking? How much of that was the scheming? How much of that was the play calling? That's the question you have to ask yourself.
Well, that's how I feel. So the quote, to me, he was a function of a bad offense. Because if you're using that guy properly, that's not the case with him. You know, he does have a body of work, but this is it. Quote, now more than anything, we've got to make sure that Swift understands that he can find 4.5 yards between the tackles, but also hit the home run when he needs to.
4.5 yards between the tackles, huh?
Man, that is a
you see a lot of that last
discussion.
Year? Saw a lot less than 4.5 yards between the tackles.
3.8 yards per carry for him last year. He only had 4 runs gain more than 20 yards.
Again, those don't even sound like home runs. Those sound like doubles.
When you put it onto a baseball term like that, that is indeed the case. I know we have a little bit more from Eric Bieniemy as well, so let's listen in. What does he think of that current running back situation?
I feel pretty good about the group. I've had an opportunity to watch DeAndre, spent some time with DeAndre when he came out during the time when he during the draft, so I know all about him. A very, very hardworking kid that doesn't take anything for granted. He loves to work. Now, more than anything, we just got to make sure that he understands that he can find 4.5 in between the tackles, but also hit the home run when he needs to. But he's a great young man that works his tail off. Roshan, young up-and-coming player, big kid, plays hard, doesn't take anything for granted, looking forward to working with him. Travis is by far, first of all, he brings a tremendous amount of energy. He does a hell of a job on special teams. He's a four-phase guy, you know, which you love that about him because you can't have enough of those team players. And then we got a young kid by the name of Ian who's coming off of
Ian injury. Wheeler.
And Ian, I mean, just
terrific preseason.
Exactly. Yeah. And he showed flashes. So we want to see exactly what all we can continue to develop with him and see how he grows. So I'm excited about the group.
So you hear inside there that quote that we discuss. And it's funny to hear me read it, and it's funnier to hear him say it, because even there you hear a difference.
Well, yeah, what he's emphasizing when he talks about it, the way he's joking around, talking about RB1 as it stands today in DeAndre Swift. Listen, he's trying to work with what he has. I think what he has is going to change in a few weeks. And then we can revisit how he feels about that running back room.
Roshan Johnson?
That's the first time I've heard Roshan Johnson's name in a long time.
But deserves to be discussed in this.
Well, I mean, he's part of the running back room, but what did he do to impress you when he came back with that Guardian cap? Like, the lasting image of him for me was him with the Guardian cap not doing a whole lot. And I'm not saying that's his fault because, again, the offensive line, the scheme, the play caller.
I thought he shouldn't have even been out there. If you have to wear a Guardian cap, and you should.
I don't think he had to. I think he just chose to. I think most of the guys, no one's saying you have to, I mean, wear a Guardian cap. There's studies out there that say it doesn't even help. So.
But I'm all for you doing what you need to protect yourself more. But I also think that if there's even a question, take yourself out. That's how I felt.
I think he felt good enough to play, and he was just like, I want to make sure I have all the security in the world. So I'm good with that. I think the DeAndre Swift thing is interesting because are they drafting and adding a running back to supplant him or to supplement him? Which one is it? That's the biggest question I have about the running back room.
Well, and it's really difficult to not think of what happened to him in Detroit.
The fact that he was released and Ben Johnson was on the coaching staff? Yeah. And we don't know who made that decision. Yeah.
He ends up in Philadelphia, and I understand that, you know, coaching regimes, and we probably haven't talked about just the sheer bigger piece of the fact that they will reshape your roster. Even when you have the same GM, a coach is going to come in and say, I can't work with this person, I can work with this one. We know that there's a lot of hope and a lot of optimism behind Roshan Johnson. Even when he got drafted, it was, he was playing behind the best running back in the country in Bijan Robinson. That made sense to everybody. But you're also asking more of him at this level. So how is that going to take shape? The Bears need a downhill runner. And I don't know if he's trying to make DeAndre Swift into one when he says that. Sure sounds that way to me. or if they're trying to say that they need that presence overall. He said him, but I just don't know that you can change an individual's makeup like that.
I think there's probably more meat on the bone, in his opinion, between the tackles, and that's what he was alluding to when he said that. And he kind of laughed it off also to let you know that, you know, he wasn't saying that he wasn't good at being a running back. There's just certain things that he can work on based on what he's seen from the tape. And we've seen the tape too, Layla. I mean, we know that he was not as effective if he wasn't bouncing outside and had something on the edge.
Yeah, that's how I felt. But was it a function of just what he was seeing and what at that point the offense was allowing him to do via the game plan against the defense? Or was it his natural style now that he's with this team? Like, the both things deserve to be discussed. What I think about if they could possibly take a tight end, you know, could they maybe in one of the top four 72 overall picks that they have? Is that somebody who you want to be multiple? Can that tight end perhaps run? Would that add make the same things look different things look the same aspect?
So you want a tight end coming out of the backfield?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, how do you spell this? How do you try to supplement what you have on your roster, at least committed for another 2 years in theory in that contract?
I like the Bears have given Ben Johnson this sort of blank check moment. You have no history with the Bears. The only history I know about you is an up-and-coming coach who then became an offensive coordinator who had arguably the best offense in football during your time, your span as an offensive coordinator for the Lions. So I'm willing to say, okay, I'll ride with you. It's like when you jump in the car with somebody and they're like, oh, we're going to make a few stops. And, of course, you want to know, well, where are we going? But also, sometimes you'll be like, all right, and you just don't care. I don't care. I trust the driver in this situation. But if he makes a few too many stops and I'm like, bro, I'm hungry. Can we go get something to eat? It's like, I got to make a few more stops. At some point, you're going to be like, hey, what's good? Stop. I need to get this burger real quick.
But I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking about how we probably haven't just simply accounted for more roster turnover because there's a new head coach. Like, that's just a simple fact of the NFL. And if you're looking at it from not inside the city, how are you looking at that? You would probably think, oh, yeah, Ben Johnson's got a lot of cleaning up to do. Like, there's probably going to be a lot of guys who get cut and aren't on that team anymore. That's just naturally what happens. But we haven't really seen that yet. We've just seen the additions.
Because we're wondering still about that initial audit. Who does he believe can help him win next season versus what's out there to be gotten? And we're not going to know that, let's be honest, till the end of training camp, when final cuts are made. But it's interesting to see who gets cut immediately and who you might have thought, oh, they're definitely not back. Oh, they're still on this roster. Interesting. Or they got re-signed.
Yeah, exactly. Or they didn't get traded.
Exactly.
Which is a fate that can befell Swift. So that's something I consider as well. We have more coming up here on the Midday Show, live from Wings and Rings on the South Side. I love it every time. It's like a magic cue. Every time I say that, people clap, and then it's great. Let's try it again. Wings and Rings on the South Side. Hey! Love it. Okay, we're getting ready for 3 o'clock. First pitch here on the South Side. And like I said, we have more coming up baseball-wise, but we shift gears a little bit and we talk a little NCAA hoops. PJ Glasser from the BetMGM Network, the show Send It In and Inside the Betting Lines. He will get us ready for tournament action coming up next on The Score.
One bucket to keep its season alive. Gillespie from the out of bounds to the freshman queen who's driving, floats it.
Oh!
Maryland on the right side of a buzzer beater with life. Into the Sweet 16!
Oh yeah, because everything is happening today. We got to get you ready for NCAA tournament action. Marshall, I love that song. Like, when I say I love the song, I mean I actually love the song.
What song is that?
It's the tournament song.
Oh, the CBS Sports theme to the NCAA tournament?
I will always hear John Greenberg. I will always hear Greg Gumbel. And I did look at John Greenberg's article just now. That's why I said that. But I will always think of Greg Gumbel. And I will always think of just hearing his voice whenever I hear that music. And I don't think that's a bad thing. We have NCAA tournament action tonight. So that is why we're bringing to you. PJ Glasser from the BetMGM Network. The shows are Send It In, which I enjoyed the title of that show, and Inside the Betting Lines. He joins us on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. PJ, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys, and I'm with you, Layla. I love that March Madness theme song. It's the best, that little jingle.
It really is. Like, it just gets you ready. That's the whole point. So when you consider the four games tonight, you got BYU, Alabama, Maryland, Florida, Arizona, and Duke, and then Arkansas, Texas Tech to round out the slate. What stands out to you about what you could see here? I would even attempt to ask if there's a possible upset, but there's been so much chalk, I just don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, my biggest takeaway is kind of, or either of the one seed's going to be in trouble tonight. I think a big part of the conversation heading into the tournament was how these one seeds, Duke, Florida, Auburn, and Houston, were kind of on a level, another level than everybody else. Duke's looked like the best team so far in the tournament. Florida obviously got a scare from UConn in the round of 32. Both teams have some tough matchups tonight. I don't know if Maryland or Arizona can pull off the upset. I think they might be able to keep the game close. But, again, Florida and Duke, probably the two best teams in the country. I'm interested to see if they get tested tonight. But if you guys wanted, like, a possible upset, I would look at Arkansas against Texas Tech. Arkansas is getting one of their better players back tonight, Adu Thierro. He's going to be available. Texas Tech might still be without Chance McMillan, who's their starting point guard. And, you know, we saw St. John's obviously struggle to hit some shots against Arkansas, who's a good defensive team. If Texas Tech struggles to knock down some shots tonight as well, I think Arkansas's got a chance to keep this great run going that they have and pull off the upset.
As a Mississippi State grad, I'm very disappointed that my Bulldogs did not make it past the first round, let alone the second round into the Sweet 16. But I got to ask you, how real is the possibility of an all SEC Final Four?
I mean, they got 7 of the 16 teams left. You know, they're guaranteed at least one into the Elite Eight with Tennessee and Kentucky playing tomorrow. And, you know, we know that they've been a historical league this year. I mean, this is maybe the best league we've ever seen. They sent 14 teams to the tournament. I think it's very real. Obviously, you have Auburn and Florida, who are two number one seeds. I just mentioned Kentucky and Tennessee. They're getting somebody to the Elite Eight out of that Midwest region. And then, you know, Bama is a team in that Duke region that made the Final Four last year, and they returned just about everybody from that team. So I don't think it's going to happen. I'd say maybe we get like 2 SEC teams to the Final Four, potentially 3, but would not shock me at all. The fact that they have 7 of the 16 left, they've been the best league all year, would not shock me at all if we do get an all SEC Final Four.
I think when it comes to considering the path to the Final Four, and even just what you said with the upsets, You look at a team like Arkansas, for example, and that could help another team's cause if they knock down Texas Tech. The Big 12 had an excellent record so far in the tournament. If we're going to look at conference play, you know, how do you consider just conference per against conference, pound for pound, who's performing to the expectations?
Yeah, I mean, look, the SEC, you guys, earlier in the season when they did the SEC-ACC challenge, the SEC just, they crushed them. I think they played whatever it was, like 16 games. The SEC went 14-2. And, you know, the ACC only got 4 teams left in the tournament, only one's left in Duke. So, I mean, kind of what we saw in the non-conference has been an indicator as to what we've gotten so far in the tournament. The Big Ten started the tournament at 10-0. They've lost a couple games since then, but, you know, Purdue's still alive, and Maryland and Michigan is having a great run as well. So, yeah, I mean, the three best leagues all year were the SEC, the Big 12, and the Big 10, and they have 15 of the 16 teams that are left. The ACC, as we know, is really down this year. They only have Duke left. So when you think about how these teams looked in the non-conference, how they looked in conference play, it's really no surprise that we really only have like 3 conferences at this point representing the Sweet 16.
And when you look ahead to Friday's action, it's still all SEC in this game, but there could be a potential upset. Number 3 Kentucky taking on 2 seed Tennessee. What do you think about that game in Indianapolis?
Yeah, of all the Sweet 16 games, you guys, I think that's the toughest one for me to call, you know, because Kentucky beat Tennessee twice in the regular season. You have that old mantra, it's tough to beat a team three times. But there is something about that matchup that just really puzzles Tennessee. Like, they cannot figure out Kentucky. What's interesting about that game and also the Houston-Purdue game is that they're playing in the football stadium. So the regional's in Indianapolis, but they're not playing where the Pacers play. They're playing where the Colts play at Lucas Oil. So, like, when you're looking at that game, when you're looking at the Houston game, I think, like, first half unders are the play. It's obviously a big adjustment. It's going to feel like a Final Four with those guys, you know, playing in a football arena. And Kentucky, Purdue, those are good offensive teams going up against great defensive teams in Tennessee and Houston. And I just think, you know, the sight lines and dealing with all that, it could be a little bit of an adjustment. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. You know, Kentucky's an offensive team. Tennessee's a defensive team. I think playing in a football stadium like that might favor Tennessee, and obviously the fact that Kentucky's trying to beat Tennessee for a third time. So I bet the under. And I would probably pick Tennessee if you had to make me pick the game. But again, Kentucky has had their number. Wouldn't shock me if they pulled the upset.
PJ, hard to beat a good team three times in one season. So I understand why that is a little confounding to try to pick a winner in that one. Looking overall, when you reset from 68 teams to 64 teams and now to 16 teams, is there a betting favorite that you like or a long shot that you like, I should say, to win it all?
Yeah, it's tough to pick a long shot to win it all at this point. I really do think it's going to be one of the one seeds. I would put Duke and Houston probably as the favorites at this point. Coming into the tournament, I thought those were the two best teams. And, you know, Houston was challenged by Gonzaga, who's really good. Their offense, you know, they're a top five three-point shooting team with a great defense. I think they're going to be tough to beat. And then Duke, with just their top-end talent, you got Cooper Flagg, who's going to be the number one pick. They have two other lottery picks outside of him. So I think it's a tough year to pick a long shot just because of how strong these one seeds are, and especially Duke or Houston. If you want, like, a long shot Final Four team, I kind of like Michigan, you guys. They just got the feel of a team to me that just they have it going right now. You know, they went on a little bit of a slide towards the end of the regular season, but they won the Big Ten tournament. They took care of a really good 12 seed in UCSD. They also just beat an SEC team in Texas A&M, which I think will help them prepare for the Auburn game tomorrow. And then it'd be awesome if we get, like, an all-Michigan Elite Eight with them matching up against the Spartans potentially. So I think if you're looking for a long shot, I would more so look at the Final Four market rather than the national championship, and I think Michigan might be a good team to look at.
Well, just looking at the spread in that game, that might be just a good one then to bet, because if Auburn is favored by 9.5, then that might be just a good one to even have Michigan cover the spread in that game. Ole Miss and Michigan State's a little closer than I thought. I'm seeing 3.5 that Michigan State is giving there.
Yeah, I like both underdogs in that game, you guys. Michigan, yeah, as I just mentioned, I think there may be a good play to make the Final Four. I think they're definitely a good bet getting all those points at 9.5. I would look at money line, too, at +350. Something's just not right with Auburn. You know, this was the team to beat probably in, like, mid to late February. They looked tremendous through the first, like, 25, 26 games of the season. But it's just like you watch them play, and it's just not quite that same team. They struggled with Alabama State a little bit in the first half. Then they played Creighton. They were trailing at halftime of that game. So, you know, Michigan's a good team, and they got a great coach in Dusty May, who made it to the Final Four a couple years ago with FAU. So I definitely like them plus the points. I also like Ole Miss. That's a great coaching matchup with the Spartans and the Rebels, Tom Izzo against Chris Beard. I've been looking to fade this Michigan State team, though. To me, guys, they're a lot like St. John's. Hall of Fame head coach, great defense, but they can't shoot the ball. Michigan State shoots like 30% from three-point range. That's just not a good formula in 2025 to win in March Madness with obviously how often teams shoot the three-pointer. So I like Michigan and Ole Miss plus the points in both of those games, and it wouldn't surprise me if Ole Miss pulled off the upset against Michigan State.
We're talking to PJ Klaser of BetMGM Network, of the show Send It In and Inside the Betting Lines. And I guess that leads me to also ask about the spread on the Houston and Purdue game, because we know that U of H's last game was very close. There were some fouling issues late there. What do you make of that matchup?
Yeah, so I told you guys earlier that, again, same region as Tennessee, Kentucky, playing in the football stadium. So I like the first half under 62.5 in that game. But I also like Houston. I'd lay the 8.5 with them. Purdue, here in the last month of the season, has had one of the worst two-point defenses in all of college basketball. They cannot stop teams from getting into the paint and knocking down two-point jump shots. And that's where Houston wants to live. They're top five in the country in three-point percentage. But on top of that, they're one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. So I think their combination of how well they shoot the three, their ability to rebound in the game, hit layups, mid-range jumpers, I think it's going to be really tough for Purdue to deal with. And, you know, I think their guards, Purdue, Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, I think they're going to have a tough time dealing with that Houston pressure. So I honestly think anything single digits, anything under 10, 8.5, 9, I think it's a good bet with Houston. I like them to roll in that matchup.
PJ, tell me where you think Duke's undoing will come. Because, I mean, they're a team that's been good. Obviously, the ACC wasn't what it was. But they have, as you mentioned, so much star power with Cooper Flagg in the game.
So here's my thing with Duke, you guys. They are 1-3 this season in games that have been decided by 6 points or less, if you don't count the North Carolina game in the ACC tournament where Cooper Flagg didn't play. So in the games that he has played, they're 1-3 in games that are decided by 6 points or less. That's going to be their undoing if they play a game that is close with 3 minutes to go, because they just, it's like those old Gonzaga teams, right? When they wouldn't play in a great conference, they had all these good teams, and then they get into March Madness and they weren't used to a close game with 3 minutes to go, 2 minutes to go. And I think that's going to be Duke's downfall. But they're so good that they might almost be like these UConn teams from the last couple of years where they just don't make any game close. They just kind of win every game by double digits. I will say, if they get Alabama in the Elite Eight playing against an offensive juggernaut like that, a team that wants to shoot a lot of threes, like, I want to see Duke against a team that shoots a lot of threes, and if they're making a lot of threes, I think that game could be interesting. But to me, Marshall, I think that's the only way you beat them. You got to make it a close game with 4 or 5 minutes to go, just so you can put pressure on them because they're not used to those situations. And if you can do that, then I think maybe Duke can be in trouble. But to me, they're the team to beat, and I would lay the points with them against Arizona tonight, too. I like them -9.5.
PJ Klaser, great insight, great perspective. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Midday Show on The Score.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me.
That was PJ Klaser of BetMGM Network, Send It In and Inside the Betting Lines, talking tournament with us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. High Noon is next.
Is it almost noon already?
I think we need to play a game.
What's the game?
I'm not even going to try to be like Bane. I'm not going to do it.
What's the game?
I think we've got to judge the, according to CBS Sports, 10 wildest new items at ballparks around the league.
One of the names is already unstable. Oh, okay. I'm with it. Let's do it next on High Noon.
Sounds good on The Score.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there. Out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High Noon?
This is High Noon. Did you know that yesterday the afternoon show did it at this time?
Spiegel was confounded. He could not understand the concept, apparently. Matt Spiegel was struggling on the High Noon from the tease ahead of time. And then when they got in there, he was just like, But what? Lawrence carried it. Lawrence. He was true to High Noon because he's done it, obviously, many times before.
We got to teach Spiegel the ways of the High Noon.
It was his first ever High Noon. We'll get him back on there. We should have him call in next week to join us for High Noon.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. I learned a party trick. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
We are live from Wings and Rings on Halsted. See? Oh. And everybody just claps because we got the Sox crowd filling in. I love it because these are... the people that I enjoy watching games with. It's nice to see a lot of people. Our 108 crews here. I see a lot of familiar faces and fans. Thank you guys for coming out. There is still room for everybody because we are live from 3434 South Halstead as we get ready for the game. It is better at the ballpark. I actually agree with that. Come by, enjoy an ice cold Yingling before the game. Brought to you by Yingling, America's oldest brewery. And check out the place because it's newly remodeled. It's open 7 days a week, the Southside's premier sports restaurant experience, and there's free shuttle service to all the Sox home games with proof of purchase, free parking in the back. Every Wednesday at Wings and Rings, $5 premium drinks all day. Unfortunately, it is not Wednesday, it is Thursday. But guys, I think you want to do your thing. We also had PJ Glasser on earlier to talk tournament. Eric Bieniemy had a lot to say on the Bears official podcast. We listened to that. Part two of the Jed Hoyer Q&A. Chris Getz in there as well. And just kind of taking a look at how we feel ahead of both teams' domestic opening days. All right, Marshall, I have a game.
Before you do that, I just want to say it was a joy to be joined by PJ Glasser last segment to talk a little hoops.
Yes, it was.
A reminder, the tournament now down to 16 teams. College hoops coverage on the Score brought to you by
Bet365. Bet365, indeed. I got excited.
No, I understand why, because I'm looking at the same thing you're looking at.
All right, the 10 wildest ballpark foods that are new around the league. We start with, and some of these names are kind of ridiculous, the Filthy Mac Fries from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Cajun fries, white cheddar mac and cheese, pork belly bacon, and crispy onions.
Can't go wrong with pork belly bacon. I'm in.
He's in. All right, the next one. This is Chicago, and I don't like saying the name of this next food item from the Pittsburgh Pirates, but you guys just know that. They're called Polish cannonballs. How do we feel about this?
I don't have a problem necessarily with the I'm trying to understand what's in it. So it's fried balls full of egg noodles, kielbasa, cabbage, bacon, and cheddar. No, I'm down with everything in the cannonball.
Studs, I appreciate you chiming in. Your thoughts?
I like everything that I just heard. Yeah, Polish cannonballs. What's wrong? Yeah, nothing wrong with that, in my opinion.
All right, Polish cannonballs.
As the show Polish person, I approve.
I had to respect the people, man. I'm going to ask a question if I find that there might be an issue. Next is the warehouse burger from the Baltimore Orioles.
Baltimore always does it right.
So this one is a burger that has two beef patties, queso, and fried onions, and the bun is a pretzel bun.
That sounds so messy with the queso.
But it sounds so good. I love queso.
Yeah.
The more queso, the better.
Ryan Porth would enjoy that burger because I know how much he loves queso.
When I lived in Austin, if you cut open my veins, it was pretty much Maker's Mark and queso.
Maker's Mark and queso. That's an interesting combination.
I mean, you didn't do it at the same time. That would be weird.
Queso with some Maker's Mark in it.
I don't know that would taste good.
Yeah, I think it would. Just
Ryan Porth. Yeah, quit showing us the food, Ryan. We're here. We haven't had our food yet. We've been working. All right, next up, they say it's wild, but I say it's good. It's your Chicago White Sox. That's the closest to Gene I'm going to get. I'm sorry, guys. That's all I can do. I don't have the base that Gene has. I just mentioned I don't drink as much Makers. Okay, so that's the celebration cake shake. Out of a round of applause here at Wings and Rings, who's having the cake shake at some point this season, the birthday cake milkshake? Anybody? Yes, yes, no? All right, I would say that's a good. I'd say that's a good sample of cake consuming and shake consuming population. So I feel like that's a yes.
You can't go wrong with confetti cake.
It looks really pretty, doesn't it? It's very it does. Pinterest.
Does.
Okay, and it has the pinwheel cookie as an ode to the scoreboard. So I think that's a good one. Next, we have unstably titled again, the Daddy Mac Dog from the Astros.
I'm intrigued by this one.
Daddy Mac Dog is brisket, mac and cheese, and fried pickles on a hot dog. And the hot dog is a foot long.
Well, it says eating this hot dog is probably a 2 or 3 person mission. But I could take one down by myself. I'm very confident in that.
Who would you invite with you in your life?
Me, myself, and I. I just said I could take it down, but I'm not sharing that. I'll get you your own.
Okay, this is cute, and I think it's just adventures in food coloring. Blue velvet whoopie pies from the Kansas City Royals. You know, that's just the puffy cookie with the cream filling.
Yeah, I'm not a big whoopie pie guy, but I'd give it a try.
I love the Little Debbie oatmeal cream pie. That is still something that I hold near and dear to my heart.
I was never with those. This next one, though.
Nick Saban.
I'm all about the next one.
Oh, I saw the next one. Would you like to do the honors?
So, number four, according to CBS Sports.
Number four.
The New York Yankees are offering helmet tiramisu. That's mascarpone cream, lady finger cookies, and cocoa powder. And it looks absolutely a mess, but in a good way.
No, I saw this earlier somewhere along the way, like just came into the algorithm because baseball, and I was like, oh.
And the best part is you get the novelty helmet with it, so you get to keep the helmet. You eat it out of the helmet, and you get to keep the helmet.
So tiramisu at the ballpark, are you eating with your pinky up, and you're like, I'm so classy right
now? Am I in the seats or am I in the suite? Where am I? That will determine how I will adapt to my environment. I am a chameleon. I can do whatever is needed, whatever is necessary.
I've sat in the crowd at Yankee Stadium. I've never done a suite because I'm not a gagillionaire. But I felt like there was not an unclassy seat in the joint.
I felt like you know someone who could get you into the suite at Yankee Stadium.
I was just happy to get the tickets. And then there was a rain delay, and they played Yankeeography, and this woman cried next to me like she hadn't seen the World Series. I'm like, it's been, at that point, it was 15 years. It was more than that. I'm like, it's been 20 years, and you forgot the World Series from the Yankees 2000 World Series, really?
All their 27 World Series titles?
Like, you just forgot. Okay. So, the next is actually from the Phillies, and this also looks top-notch. Why did it take 2025 to come up with a s'mores quesadilla?
S'mores quesadilla is fascinating to me.
S'mores in a quesadilla!
It's because you get the s'mores without the mess. It's all wrapped in that quesadilla. So you get the flavors of the s'mores, the marshmallow, the graham, and also obviously the chocolate. But it's all compactly fitting together.
The beauty of the Crunchwrap Supreme is that it's a whole meal in a tortilla, and you just take it with you. The Phillies did it right. They figured out a portable way to have s'mores. Next is the What Up Corn Dog. Oh, God, I felt terrible saying it out loud. From the Seattle Mariners.
Why?
Because it's a bad joke, but it's silly. And this corn dog is teal?
Are you calling it corny?
Green teal? No, it's like, what up, dog? What
no,
up,
I got it.
Corn dog? Oh, man. We were doing so well on the show.
But the thing is, it's honey battered, but they colored it green.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
It's definitely green. Like, there's a reflection in the light here, so you could argue teal potentially, but I'd say it's green.
And for number one, it looks like Dr. Frankenstein returned to the lab to create this concoction.
I protest this from the deepest pit of my being.
Tell me why.
Cotton candy fries from the Blue Jays.
It's just fries with some cotton candy on top, right?
Fries do not need cotton candy. Those two things don't go together.
I would say cotton candy doesn't need fries.
There is a blue puff and a white puff of cotton candy on top of these fries with some sort of blue dressing on them.
Yeah, I don't know about the blue dressing.
Now, listen, Canadians know a thing or two about fries because poutine is awesome.
Now, if it had been poutine with cotton candy, now you're cooking.
What?
I don't know if you're cooking anything good, but you're cooking.
You can't really. I guess you can make sweet poutine. I don't know. That's not my area of expertise.
Yeah, that's the Quebecois and all of them. They got that down.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So what do you think is the best out of those 10?
Best out of the 10?
If you had to order one thing, what would you order?
I think it might be the s'mores quesadilla or the tiramisu helmet.
I think I'm going with the shake. I'm a milkshake fiend.
Cake.
All of that.
And the words of Rihanna.
It's either the cake or the warehouse burger.
The warehouse burger looks awesome.
Pretzel bun, queso, I'm with it.
Pretzel bun is top notch.
I'm with it.
All this is making me hungry, and we're at Wings and Rings. So that is our latest edition of High Noon. Mark DeRosa joins us next from MLB Network. I called him D-Ro. Some of you thought I was saying D-Rose. No. D-Ro. Mark DeRosa is next on The Score.